CliffCentral.com.
Ah, yes, a little David Bowie to make you feel good this morning. And China Girl. It is quarter after seven. CliffCentral.com. Just the other day, somebody sent us a message to say, hey, can you get an expert on to talk about how people who have an addiction are coping during lockdown because we've got these restrictions on tobacco and alcohol. And while we joke about it, and we really have, we've been talking about, you know, buying off the black market, and we've been laughing about how people have been bust with horrible counterfeit cigarettes and Hong Kong liquor and all kinds of dangerous stuff. We have been joking about it. We've been paying attention to the news. Just yesterday, they bust a big factory in Pretoria where there was a whole lot of contraband and Hong Kong cigarette sale taking place. And today, I thought we'd just for a moment take it seriously, because it is actually a very big problem for the people who are going through it. And it can lead to all kinds of ugly social and I suppose even inside families behavior that isn't necessarily helpful to anyone. And we're joined this morning by somebody who really does know about this stuff. And I'm delighted that she could find some time for us today, because Lauren Martin must be very busy. She's a counseling psychologist and head of teaching and learning at the South African College of Applied Psychology. And Lauren, it's a great pleasure to speak to you today. So I assume you've been talking to a lot of people about this. You've maybe been speaking to addicts. You've certainly been speaking to the other people at the South African College of Applied Psychology. But what is the most important stuff to know about addicts while lockdown's going on?
Thanks for having me, Gareth. I'm glad to be here. And I guess this is a really serious conversation, and I'm glad that we can have it.
Sure.
It's a massive topic, so I guess it's quite difficult to narrow down one or two major points that we need to know.
Right.
But I guess what I do want to say is that we need to be having ethical conversations, you know, ethics of care. There needs to be humanity. We need to be thinking about society and those that are often forgotten, and that would include addicts. Let's be honest, many people feel like addicts have chosen this. It was a choice in the beginning, and they've put themselves in this position. Yeah. And therefore, why do we actually need to care? You know, why should we have to go out there and care for them? And I think a lot of people in society feel that way.
Mm.
And I guess, you know, if we think about this ban that's happened, a lot of addicts are in withdrawal or going through relapse because they can't get their substance or the alcohol at the moment. And, you know, I'm annoyed by it, because I'm saying, let's have some humanity here. While they make up a smaller portion of the population, let's ensure that we have the resources and the funding that we can actually hold the withdrawal or the relapse or even the death that could come with that.
Well, that's a scary thought, that there could be death even that comes from this. And I'm not going to ask you to criticize the government or to worry about public policy, because neither you nor I can change that.
Yeah.
What is worse? And this is such a hard question, I'm sure, for you to grapple with, because both are so awful. But what is worse for an addict? Being deprived of the substance that you are addicted to, which can lead to all kinds of bad behavior and ills, or being locked into a house with the substances and the people you love or the people you purport to love, and behaving badly because you're addicted to those substances and you're on them? I mean, is there a better case for the people who you live with if you're an addict?
I mean, this is, I guess, why it's so debated within media, between professionals, between stakeholders, because there doesn't seem to be a right answer here. And you even have those within like mental health organizations, those that deal with substances, on either side of the debate, saying, let's actually uphold the ban because it is better, while others are saying, well, actually, it's not. And has done, or what the World Health Organization has recommended, is that we keep the ban, that actually those that go through withdrawal or relapse, or those that actually have quite a physical withdrawal symptom and may lead to hospitalization, they're saying that that would be better because we are protecting society. Those that live with addicts, for example, there's a high case of gender-based violence.
Yeah.
You know, and so we look at all these stats, but the problem is we actually don't have reliable stats in South Africa. Yeah. And so we're going on what we think, you know, mental health stats have been highly criticized, and we continue not to have reliable stats. So how do we know if actually the decisions that we are making are in the best interest of addicts, but also society at large?
So what happens to an addict when they go through, like, alcohol withdrawal, for example? I mean, there are probably a lot more people than we know that are addicted to alcohol in South Africa, binge drinkers and people who go out every weekend. And, you know, there are many of us who have to look very seriously at our own lives and figure out whether or not we're alcoholics. So first of all, is there a way you can tell whether you're an addict? And second of all, what are the symptoms of withdrawal and what can people do to alleviate the very difficult process of withdrawal?
So, I mean, addiction just in general is somebody that has a physical and a psychological dependence on a substance or on alcohol, and they continue to choose that or consume that despite it having a negative effect and them knowing that it has a negative effect on them. Okay. What is difficult to see at the moment is the withdrawal, because lockdown in itself, I mean, there's an international study that has looked at lockdown and the effects that it brings up, and the wide range of psychological stress symptoms. So the average person that is not addicted would have symptoms like insomnia and anger and irritability, and those are actual common symptoms within withdrawal as well. But now imagine you're having these symptoms that everyone else is also having, facing things like retrenchment or staying at home with kids, or, you know, you actually have a mental health disorder, or you have a disease like addiction. Mm. And so it just exacerbates. It's this vicious cycle that people are sitting with at the moment. And I'm definitely not here to criticize those that aren't able to step up and kind of help addicts or anyone else, because people are in survival mode. And survival mode puts people in looking after yourself. And so addicts, unfortunately, are isolated and experiencing symptoms many of us are experiencing, but on top of that, it's exacerbated. And many of them die, or many of them end up having to go and be hospitalized in order to assist in this withdrawal that's happening.
Wow. Is self-harm something we should be especially aware of during this time? Because, and I'm not talking about the ultimate evil, you know, the ultimate evil, the ultimate end result of self-harm, which in some cases can be suicide. But but are people likely, because of this compounding of all of these factors, the lockdown itself, potentially mental illness, being retrenched, the difficulty of managing a household where everybody's stuck in maybe one or two rooms, and we have these problems in South Africa more than we're willing to admit. All of that aside, do people also put themselves in danger during times like this by trying to get their hands on illicit substances while there's a ban?
I mean, absolutely. An addict isn't in control of their behavior at this part. You know, at this point, sure, they have to have their substance. And while there's a lot of stigma and discrimination toward or against addicts, they don't have a choice here. It is a disease, and so they have to do what they have to do in order to get their fix. And if that means that they need to now engage in illegal activity, like going to go and buy on the black market, that is what they will do. And those that just absolutely cannot get hold of their substance might experiment, and they go and find something else to try and fill that fix for them. And you never know what they may consume in that. You know, there are stories about alcohol that isn't actually alcohol, or homemade alcohol, or cigarettes that are filled with things that shouldn't be in that. So we are actually putting vulnerable people in an even more vulnerable situation at this stage.
Lauren, with alcohol, when does the process of withdrawal start? for a real alcoholic, for someone who knows that they have a problem with alcohol and they haven't been able to get their hands on it, and let's say that, you know, we're now into 50 days or more of lockdown, how long after that do you know you're in withdrawal after that last drink, and how long does it last?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great question, and unfortunately, it's not a straightforward answer here because everyone is different, and the extent of addiction would be different for different people.
Right.
But, I mean, for some people, within, you know, the first couple of days, they would go into withdrawal. And I guess here, and it would continue, it would persist and only get worse. So, or while your psychological symptoms will exacerbate, so, you know, anger or irritability and stress and anxiety, what comes along with that is the physical stresses. So there you would have people that physically would start to manifest consequences. So that means that they could actually end up in hospital because their body actually needs the alcohol in order to survive. I mean, and I'm speaking from personal experience here. I myself lived with an addict, and they themselves went into hospital. We live in a privileged home, and yet the withdrawal of a privileged man, to witness that is devastating to see. So those that actually cannot get the resources, because we don't have the resources accessible to the white population of South Africa, for me is very sobering to think that many people are suffering out there.
What is the effect of loneliness? Because we tend to regard these things as just being, you know, positive or negative social attributes, and they're a bonus almost to being alive and being healthy, that you also surround yourself with people, or that you're content with your own company. Loneliness, has that been explored as a source of so much anxiety for people, and potentially as a compounding influence on alcoholism or other substance dependency?
Yeah, I mean, if we can just maybe focus on addiction and kind of what loneliness means there.
Yeah.
Addiction is actually, by its very nature, isolates people. And so the lack of connection with people becomes part of the self-perpetuating cycle that keeps addicts trapped in their addiction. So lockdown is not great for addicts at this point because we are already isolated. And that exacerbates people who have addiction, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. Just loneliness in general is also one of those factors which may make people feel a lot worse right now. But we shouldn't be making necessarily, you could, but you shouldn't necessarily be making life-changing decisions at this point. It may be a good time to think about how much you consume of a certain substance, but it's probably not the right time to stop it completely, right?
Well, I guess this depends. If you've got the resources and you've got the support around you and you are able to access mental health services or a rehab or a doctor that can kind of help you through that process, then absolutely, this would be a good time to do that. But for the vast majority of the public, they don't have the funds or the resources or the support to do that. And so I would agree, this is not a good time to do it. And lockdown in and of itself takes away a lot of people's decision or choice around whether or not they want to stop. And wanting to stop it's a personal choice, and lockdown doesn't allow them to have that choice. And that exacerbates addiction because they're not in control of their own recovery here.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you just brought up now, is not being in control. Lockdown has been, I think, tough for a lot of people, but what kind of a role, and again, this is, you'd need to deal with everyone on a case-by-case basis as a therapist, but in general psychological terms, what role does fear play in people's lives at a time like this? You know, we watch the news and there's this nonstop barrage of, like, emergency, pandemic. They're showing you these blown-up pictures of the coronavirus, and everything's designed to put you on high alert the whole time that, you know, we're in immediate peril, which may or may not be the case. Certainly the science at this stage shows that this disease is not affecting the majority of people in the world. and it's not as dangerous as those first initial projections said it would be. But fear is a very real thing, and it's made some quite sensible people terrified, and they're doing some very strange things because they're afraid, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to say that the average person experiences some sort of fear, you know, whether that is, like I was saying earlier, fear of job loss or fear of how do you manage living at home and looking after kids, or whether that's your own health or the health of others. And so I think fear has become quite a common feeling that the average South African would feel. But addicts are especially very vulnerable at this stage, because part of the disease model is that the lockdown exacerbates kind of these negative thinking, fear, anxiety, and all of this is part of what triggers a relapse or part of what reinforces the addiction model. You know, if you are fearful, you drink because it brings some sort of relief to you. So at this stage, addicts are, I would say, trapped in a very vicious cycle, and it's difficult for them to get out of that. And if you can't get your fix, we have a disaster on our hands, to be honest.
Would someone who has an addiction to alcohol or cigarettes be willing to try other substances at a time like this just because they're easier to get hold of? I spoke to a friend of mine the other day, and he said it is easier to get cocaine at the moment than it is to get cigarettes. And the prices for certain drugs are lower than the prices of cigarettes and alcohol in some of the black market supply areas. Now, would people be willing to do that? And that, again, could bring in a whole new slew of problems, right?
I mean, absolutely. Let's be honest. We have people that aren't addicts at this stage who are also engaging in the black market just to get alcohol or cigarettes. And regardless of what their reasoning is, they just because they can, it's their liberties, it's what they want. But addicts will go out of their way to ensure that they get their fix. And if they cannot find their normal substance like alcohol, they would certainly experiment. At the end of the day, it's no longer a choice. It is you must have it, and therefore they will do what they can in order to get it.
Do you advise people when lockdown ends, whenever that may be, that they should resume their lives normally? And I'm talking especially about addicts here. If you've been someone who's been deprived, let's say you've gone through withdrawal, you may even have been able to develop new habits, maybe even positive new habits during lockdown. Let's look at the best case scenario here. You've managed to wean yourself off of something that you were physically addicted to. Would you advise those people to start implementing new rules in their life? Would you advise them to just go very slowly and carefully into, you know, a future which is maybe a bit different? How do you talk to somebody who might have those options open up for them again after lockdown and prevent them from either going completely crazy and resuming bad habits or making changes to their life which perhaps put them in some danger as well?
So, I mean, here I'm just going to speak in general, so not just about addicts, but I don't think we're going to go back into how life used to be. I think things are quite different at the moment. And I think people, like we're talking about within lockdown, every average person is experiencing some sort of psychological stress. And I don't know how long the lockdown will be for, but prolonged periods of psychological stress isn't healthy for an individual. And so when we come out of lockdown, in this population of ours to be able to be full functioning and able to bring back our economy. And I worry about that because many people are going to struggle psychologically with just being prepared and ready. And then we think about addicts. It is definitely not possible for an addict to do this by themselves. And so I would say that they would need to have the support. They need to reach out to the mental health services that are available. But I guess my biggest frustration is, how do we reach those people? You know, how do we provide them with the resources that they need?
Because unless they come to you, you don't know where they are, right?
Exactly. And there's a lot of stigma. Let's be honest. People don't want to be going to get help, or they are worried about what their family might think or the community might think. Psychological services have been stigmatized among certain populations. And so how do we reach them? How do we help the population make healthy choices and move away from addiction? Unless we're accessible.
You mentioned anger just now, which is, I think if you look at social media, there are a lot of people who are very angry at the moment. They're either angry because they've got circumstances which are not optimal at home. Maybe they're just irritated by their kids. Maybe their partner's driving them crazy. Maybe they're cross about their liberties being restricted in some way, shape, or form. But there are also people who are lashing out with you know, they've got good reasons in their own life, but they're lashing out at the wrong people, because they're projecting that anger in directions that it shouldn't be projected in. How can people calm themselves down, develop some clarity, and stop themselves from devolving into just very angry, sometimes violent, and not necessarily responsible individuals in society? Is there some tool we can use to just control ourselves when we get like that?
General population or for addicts?
Well, let's start with addicts, because we did say we'd address them first, and then we can talk about everyone else.
So this is quite difficult and I guess quite morbid, because I want to say that actually in a lot of ways we can put out certain resources. We can say have a healthy outlet, but when an addict is going through withdrawals, they aren't able to think rationally. You can't rationalize with an addict to say, oh, you don't need your fix, or you can't get your fix, and instead of being angry or lashing out, go for a run, for example. At that point, they are in survival. And so I guess this is also part of why the restrictions have been put in place, because they're saying that about 60% of gender-based violence cases that are reported are actually related to alcohol. And so we know that there is a problem, and we know that with alcohol often comes violence. And so it's a lot easier said than done, but find a different outlet. But for an addict, I would say that it's almost impossible.
And for the rest of us, develop new habits during this time, because it takes I hear from different people different times, but it takes a few days, maybe even a few weeks, to develop new habits. And you can implement new habits now, because a lot of people have more time on their hands that could be positive and productive. Is that one way to channel negative emotion and negative behavior?
I mean, absolutely. I think having a goal, a sense of purpose, something to work towards often helps to focus our feelings. You know, so if there's anxiety and fear and quite a lot of stuff going on, being able to focus on something often channels that energy. And so if that is to start a cook or whatever, to gym, that certainly channels it. But if you are an addict and a severe addict, by yourself, I want to say almost impossible. It requires a full program. It requires support. And it's often because addiction goes hand in hand with mental health disorders. You're not just dealing with a single issue on your hands here. So I think if you maybe are not a severe addict, maybe if you rely on alcohol now and then, although that doesn't classify you as an addict, sure, you can make some positive changes, but an actual addict in these circumstances are very vulnerable at this stage.
Yeah, I got a message here from Grant in Nelspruit, who said, my brother is so desperate for alcohol that he was willing to pay 600 rand for half a bottle of vodka.
Sure.
Just proves your point.
And I'm not surprised by that at all. At this stage, an addict will sell their house in order to get money, pay for what they need. It's severe. I mean, I'm not sugarcoating it in any way here. And I guess addicts make up a smaller portion of our population. And I guess we're making decisions based on what's in the best interest of society here, you know, for humanity, for the bigger population. But addicts need to be cared for. They cannot make decisions for themselves at this stage. They aren't in control. So how do we help them? How do we step up and say, you know what, you aren't in control, you are vulnerable, and they're being further exploited at this stage because they are paying higher prices because they need to. What are we doing? How do we help them? You know, if society keeps saying, well, it's not our problem, then whose problem is it?
Lauren, are gambling addicts going through the same thing? It's a different kind of addiction, and they can't get their fix. And maybe you can go online and do this stuff, but I don't think it's the same.
So it's not the same, but there are ways to still gamble. And so I guess in desperate measures, you can still go online, for example, and you could gamble. Or you could, you know, set up a house party or a Zoom session and you could gamble in that way. There are certainly ways around it. But yes, addiction of all type would be suffering within the current lockdown situation.
Well, listen, thank you so much. We've got a list of support providers, which we will publish on cliffcentral.com for anyone who's listened to this and feels that they do need the support. And people must know that they're not on their own. There are very good organizations that can help, right, Lauren?
Absolutely. We don't have enough. There's certainly not enough funding or resources or support or research, but we do have organizations out there doing selfless work, and they are excellent. And they offer online 24/7 assistance for families that are also living with addicts, but also for addicts themselves. So I commend those organizations, and I think if you can make that available for your listeners, that would be great.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for talking to us today. I know that a lot of the advice that you've given us is very general because we're not dealing with individual cases, and therefore it's sometimes a little harder to articulate precisely what the best course of action for everybody might be. You know, you've got to figure it out for yourself and find actual help who can, you know, someone who can sit down and talk to you about your particular problem because everyone's different. But really, you've helped address a number of questions that we've all had for a long time. And please keep doing the good work that you're doing. It's great to know that there are people who are not just thinking about themselves during this crisis. And we're going to need all the help we can get when we come out of it, too.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gareth. It was great to be able to chat with you.
Wow. Lauren Martin, the counseling psychologist and head of teaching and learning at the South African College of Applied Psychology. And as we said, Sia, we will publish a list of all of those organizations, SADAG, the COVID-19 WhatsApp number, which may be able to help you too, the Department of Social Development, Gender-Based Violence Command Center, Lifeline South Africa, and FAMSA, among others, who you can seek help from if you need it. So thank you very much, Lauren Martin. There we go. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, completely eye-opening.
Yeah, we make fun of these things and we joke about alcohol and cigarettes and what people are doing to get them, and you know, it's all good and well. We even have Leanne, who's very open about her own addictions. But if you are going through this now, I just want you to know that we are taking it seriously. Amongst all the fun and the games, it is something that we do consider a real and serious problem. And we've spoken about mental health on the show more times than I can remember, because I do consider it almost a bigger problem in South Africa than a lot of the physical diseases that people experience, because it's so misunderstood, so maligned, and so many people tend to take it less seriously when it has real-world consequences that just can debilitate people to the point of them wanting to end their own life, or worse, exact some kind of violence on other people. We've got to be upfront and honest about mental health in this country, because it is a very serious problem, and I think a wider spread problem than we even are willing to acknowledge.
You know, Gareth, I had a tragic conversation with a friend of mine yesterday. Obviously, the types of harrowing stories that Lauren was talking about now is often on the abuse substances, whatever it may be, alcohol, drugs, whatever. But I have a friend who's addicted to food. And I know that can be seen as a gluttony thing rather, but she's really in hell now, because she's done extremely well in life. She's trapped at home and her vice is meters away from her all the time. And it's been quite harrowing to go with her on that journey. So, you know, I can only imagine the mountain that Lauren and her associates have to try and deal with post-COVID with even those types of people, you know. So it's incredibly,
Well, Lella, I don't expect you to know or have all of the answers to this, but how do you know? How did she know that she was addicted to food?
Oh, no. I mean, she's been under counseling for years, but it's you know, she's, yeah, she's had this issue for a very
Mulelo,
long time.
You can tell, Sia, it's me that you're talking about. I'm getting so fat.
Oh, no. Carrot, I wouldn't call you fat.
I know you tried to disguise it by saying she and a friend, but you can say it. I mean, I've been eating like a pig, so it's me. There
I've
we
go, Sia. Of you as fat. I've always thought of you as a considerable figure.
All right, yeah, thanks very much. You're very helpful. No,
wow,
no, I think that, listen, I mean, you're talking about someone who's real and who has a real problem. So, again, and I'm one who is, I'm not especially empathetic to people who have those kinds of addictions. And I'm learning to reform on that front because I think it's as serious and should be treated as seriously as any other kind of addiction. Listen, if you're going through this, man, I'm really sorry. All I can say is, strength and uzoba strong, because what else can you say? I mean, you know, it's not like we have the answers.
And also, if you're dealing with someone who you're locked down with, who's going through this as well.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's requiring a lot from you, man.
Imagine how exhausting that is.
That's right.
I can't.
And we didn't even get to this with Lauren, but what about those people who are into like recreational drugs? And we all know people like that, right? And they haven't had the drugs, and they haven't had the parties that they have the drugs at. I wonder how those people are handling this, because they're also they're having a major come down.
It's a bit of a big general statement to make, but I think this lockdown has also been a wake-up call for a lot of people who weren't aware they have certain issues.
Sure.
So, you know, the types of people you're talking about, Gareth, is they're used to getting what they want. You know, like most people who are on those recreational drugs are of a certain economic class.
Yeah.
So now there's a double whammy. I can't have my drugs and I'm trapped at home with this monstrosity of people telling me to calm down and just go for a run.
Yeah.
Wow.
You think, I mean, look, there are good addictions and bad addictions, right? I mean, you're addicted to exercise, Mbulelo, and that doesn't have any socioeconomic negatives for the people around you. I mean, you're not going to exercise yourself to death, and you don't put yourself in danger, but some people are addicted to some good things as well, and they haven't been able to do those. I mean, there are people who are addicted to, as I said, exercise, swimming, maybe things like that, but also people who are addicted to the routine of talking to their colleagues at work every morning at the coffee machine. And these are not dangerous addictions, but they're things that we're also going to have to learn to reform. How about people who like to hug? People who like to greet by you know, shaking hands. It's a small thing, but these are habits we're going to have to break.
Yeah. Even just that point of loneliness that you guys were discussing a little earlier, I'm sure it is just like the silent.
Hey, what about
right now?
What about sex addicts?
Yeah, that's real.
What about a sex addict right now? What are they doing? What are the Christian Greys of South Africa up to at the moment?
Wait, I know one. I'll see if I can get her to come on the show. No, really? No, I'm serious.
Really, really?
Yeah, no, she's like.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she's got a problem.
Yeah, if she wants to be anonymous, we can have her on.
No, she's quite open about it, but she's...
Okay.
And then again, I ask, not making light of the situation, but how do you know this is something you're addicted to, as opposed to, I enjoy food or I enjoy having sex,
well,
and then that's
their fault. You heard what Lauren said, right? She said that it's a dependency that you can't break, whether that's a physical, emotional, or mental dependency, and which has negative consequences in your life. And you still can't stop. Despite it doing bad things in your life, you can't stop doing it. So it might be costing you too much money. It might be ruining your relationships. It might be putting other people in harm and danger's way. So all of those things are things that are happening as a result of you and this substance or you and this behavior. And there are negative results.
So when I was in my 20s, I used to be wild. And when I speak to my mother about those days, she says the greatest crisis for her as a...
Your mother's a psychiatrist, so we've got to throw that in because she has a slightly, you know, better insight into why her child was doing certain things than most parents would.
Yeah, and she said her biggest thing for her was she realized she'd never been educated in how to deal with a crisis of the soul in somebody. I had a crisis of the soul, but she didn't know how to reach that part of me academics.
What do you mean a crisis of the soul?
So yeah, that, you know, like, right now sounds like the title of your autobiography.
Absolutely not. No, but you know, we always pander to the logical reasoning of, oh, he's doing this because the academic says this. When somebody says, why do people feel disconnected? No books really talk about that. No people, you can't really quantify the value of a hug or a touch or feeling valued.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother realized at that stage that she didn't have what she needed to reach my soul. She could reach my mind, which was massive for me to hear from my mom, because she's, wow. Yeah.
And how did you eventually get past that?
What, my wild days or?
No, like, how did she connect you or how did you connect, first of all, to what your soul was looking for? And second of all, how did she make sense of it in her head?
You know, for me, it became a choice of, I could choose between alcohol and my mother.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
When I hit rock bottom, you know, rock bottom clarifies things.
You were a big drinker, huh?
I was about it. I was about that life. Yeah, wow. Big time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big time, yeah.
All right, I would love to explore this further, but unfortunately, we don't have the time. And we've got to get to something equally interesting with someone who I'm sure you've seen on television a number of times. He is easily the most well-groomed guy. Sia, come on, you can even admit. And I see you've shaved that beard off this morning. You're looking very fresh, and you're looking 20 again. But you've got to admit, Shahan Ramkissoon on ENCA is easily the most well-groomed man on television. He's got this perfect facial hair that's just it's groomed to within an inch of being a sculpture. The guy is he's got, his hair is always perfectly in place. He looks like he's never had a skin problem in his life. I mean, the guy's a perfect person to speak to about looking your best and you know, getting your grooming game strong, which is precisely what we do with Shower Diaries. It's brought to you by Sorbet Man, who are helping you to keep your grooming game strong, only on cliffcentral.com, today with Shahan Ramkissoon from television. The coronavirus pandemic has meant that everything has changed. So while you can now wear your slippers to meetings, and you don't have to put up with that annoying coworker sitting next to you, there are some things that should stay the same. And grooming is one of them. Sorbet Man presents Shower Diaries. Conversations with men who know how to help you keep your stay-at-home grooming game strong. In this episode, the most well-groomed man on TV in South Africa, Shahan Ramkissoon. Shahan Ramkissoon is an ENCA news anchor. He has an interesting and illustrious history in journalism, and he is absolutely the most well-groomed man on television. So we thought there was no way we could go about this discussion without having his input. So, Shahan, what, you raised your eyebrows when I said that. You don't believe me?
No, I don't think I'm the most groomed man on television. No way.
name the person who's more well-groomed. I dare you.
No. I don't want to give my competition any heads up, you know, Gareth. I try to keep it clean.
Well, that's exactly why we're talking to you. So, obviously, during lockdown, I mean, I've seen you guys are broadcasting anyway. So, for you, not much has changed in terms of your routine. You still go into the studio. You still have people who help you with your hair and your makeup and all the rest of it. But honestly, I mean, I'm talking to you now on Skype, and you don't have hair and makeup people around you. So, you seem to be someone who keeps it very tidy the whole time anyway.
Well, believe it or not, Garrett, no one from hair makeup actually helps me at the office. Nobody touches my hair at the office.
What?
Nope. I don't let them. They have tried for years to try to do my hair, and it's a mess. So I do not let them. I literally wake up early, even when I did the morning show. I used to wake up early to make sure that I did my hair myself, because I did not want them to mess up my hair. And beard, I do it myself.
All right, now, how do you get it so right? Because, you know, in the mirror, it sometimes looks different to how it looks on the other side.
Well, I guess I learned from Sorbet Man, because I go there once a week. Okay. I mean, they take me to a whole different level, but I watch how they do it, and that's basically how I do it. I've actually had to do a video recently of how I'm shaving at home during the lockdown, because people have been calling on the president to intervene, because I look so fresh during the lockdown period. But really, guys, it's not that hard. You just got to learn how to use that blade so you don't cut your face.
Well, that's it. But I don't blame these people for calling on the president to change the essential services category so that we can all get some grooming done. Because, man, there are some people make terrible mistakes, Shahan. And I know you're busy covering real news stories, but people do terrible things to themselves at home. I've seen stories where guys have tried to wax themselves. They've tried to wax their noses or their ears. I've tried to cut their own hair, and it's a disaster. I mean, there are these memes going around at the moment about bad lockdown haircuts. So you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I've seen people try to get their partners to help them cutting their hair as well. Bad idea, because no one can do a proper fade. Let me admit, though, that during the lockdown period, I have asked the hairstylist at the office to help me with my fade, so she's done it for
looks good.
Me.
That she's looks good. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
She's competent. Yeah, you'd give her like about a 7 out of 10.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I've had to actually use a tweezer to do my eyebrows, because there's no one available to thread them for me. And look, it's a bit
what
messy,
a horrible life.
But that's why my makeup helps.
This is basically the Stone Age for you. You can't believe you're in this situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is a nightmare for me. You have no idea. Because normally I go to Sorbet Man every Friday so that I look fresh on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Now my weekends are the times that I can actually look scruffy because I'm not on air and I'm not going out.
All right, but you are obviously doing certain things. So in the morning when you wake up, what is your routine? Do you have a regimen that you go through? Are there certain products that you insist on? Like, what kinds of stuff do you do even if you're stuck at home?
Listen, I don't really use anything. My mom taught me that water and soap is the best thing, and that's why you don't age, according to her. And that's my regimen. I don't use a moisturizer. I don't use an oil when I shave or anything like that. I shower so that the steam gets into my pores and that it softens it up. And then I shave just like that with water, nothing else, no aftercare. And when I go to Sorbet Man, they're always surprised because I always say to them, I don't want any of that on my face afterwards because I break out when I use it. And that's why it's a little easy for me right now. My routine is simple. Go to the shower, get the steam in, and shave. That's about it.
Okay, are there any tips, though, that you have picked up during lockdown that you think people should know about?
Well, I think you should not stay scruffy. If you have a beard, at least, like me, I mean, everybody, almost everyone has a trimmer, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have a trimmer, shave it off. I think that's the best way to do it.
The stubble look is no good.
No, people look dirty. I mean,
especially on a woman, it's just awful. I've seen one.
I've seen that, but I don't comment on those. You should know not to comment on that.
No, I don't comment. Just move away very quietly. Just get out of the way there. Okay, so being on TV obviously adds a lot of small details to a routine that most people wouldn't notice. I mean, for example on TV, it's very important that you have good lighting. On TV, it's often very important that you can express yourself without over-expressing yourself, especially in news. You don't want to look like a clown. But they do put a little bit of makeup on. I mean, is your skin always as good as it looks now, or do they make you look even better on TV, do you think?
So, look, I mean, my skin isn't great, but it's not bad at all. So lots of the makeup artists tell me that I have great skin, so they don't have to put a lot of makeup on to cover anything up. So that's easy.
Great.
You do get some artists, of course, who like to go the extra mile, I call it, and I tell them, the key rule here is do not make me look like a drag queen on air.
Right.
Because that can happen, especially on HD, right?
Absolutely.
Too much makeup and you'll look like you have makeup on. My key is I do not want to look like I have makeup on because I hate makeup overall anyway.
Yeah, and I remember when I've done TV stuff too, they tend to put a lot on because they think that that's safe. You know, it's not going to reflect and all the rest of it because on TV that's a problem. But actually it ends up looking kind of silly, so less is more. But I do have to ask you this because obviously, you know, being in the entertainment business and television and all the rest, there are a lot of men who are wearing makeup now on the daily, and it's become much more kind of a metrosexual, socially acceptable thing. So that's not a big deal. But there is a fine line between putting on makeup and kind of looking a bit ridiculous.
There's a fine line between putting on makeup and caking on the makeup. That's what I call. Because if you want to batter it on like it's some buttercream or whatever on top of a cake, then it's going to look unnatural. But listen, as you say, people have their own way of how they want to look. Mm-hmm. And I don't judge anyone. If you want to look like you have lots of makeup on as a man or a woman, go ahead. Sure. I lived in New York for a couple of years and I saw all sorts of things. And that's when I opened up my mind and I was like, actually, good on you. You want to look that way?
Do your thing.
I love it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that a lot of people are suffering under lockdown, not just from the way that they look, but the way that they feel. It's really important in these times for people to wake up, to have a reason to do daily activities, to look after yourself. I believe you're a bit of a CrossFit junkie.
Oh, yeah. So CrossFit and exercising I love doing because, like with CrossFit, you challenge yourself to a point where you could only lift 40 kilos and now you can lift 160 kilos. So your body amazes your mind by how strong you actually are. I can't do that now because I don't have the equipment like the other CrossFit fanatics at home.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to skip. So okay. I've been reaching goals in terms of the number of skips I can do. And I did 2,000 skips yesterday in 15 to 20 minutes. I'm going to try and go higher and higher and higher. So try to challenge myself. That's the routine that I'm keeping daily.
That sounds very good. There are obviously temptations around at this time, too, in terms of food, because people might have stocked up on too many snacks and not enough stuff that's good for them. Or maybe you're not one of those people who cooks a lot or has time to cook a lot, frankly. Would you give any advice on that front?
Well, look, I actually meal prep at least 2 to 3 times a week so that I can eat clean, because if I have to go to the Pick and Pay now and buy a pie that I could put in the oven, I definitely will do that because I'm lazy. I don't like cooking. And I've caught myself buying this pie twice in this lockdown, and I have devoured it. So the way I try to control my eating is by actually meal prepping so that I don't waste my food and I know I'm not wasting my money. That's the only way I can keep myself in check. And no lie, I bought biscuits on Sunday because I was depressed at home. And I went to the store and I bought Strawberry Worlds, Eat Some More's, and Tennis Biscuits. And I tell you, Garrick, they'll be gone by the end of this week.
Well, at least we know you're human because there are many of us who feel the same way, I'm sure. All right, so Shahan, this is all very useful stuff. Thank you very much for giving us some of your time. Are you doing TV today or what's the story? Is ENCA busy today? Are you on the schedule?
Yeah, I'm on every day from 4 to 6 o'clock, so my show is then, and I'm telling you, my sanity is here because I'm going in to do my show. I love work right now so much.
Have you noticed an uptick in the number of cars on the road?
You know what? In the past week, I have, and it's interesting that people are now starting to go out a bit more. Maybe they're all tired of being indoors, but it's still, if you don't have a valid reason to be out, you really shouldn't be. I've got my mask on standby because when I leave this house, my mask is on.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is all good, useful stuff to know. And thank you very much for your time. I hope you have an excellent day and we'll see you on TV. Thank you.
Sorbet Man, helping you keep your grooming game strong. Only on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.